Hey, it's Mike, and this podcast is brought to you by Legion, my line of naturally sweetened and flavored workout supplements. Now, as you probably know, I'm really not a fan of the supplement industry. I've wasted thousands and thousands of dollars over the years on worthless supplements that basically do nothing, and I've always had trouble finding products actually worth buying, and especially as I've gotten more and more educated as to what actually works and what doesn't. And eventually, after complaining a lot, I decided to do something about it and start making my own supplements, the exact supplements I myself have always wanted. A few of the things that make my products unique are, one, they're 100% naturally sweetened and flavored, which I think is good because while artificial sweeteners may not be as harmful as some people claim, there is research that suggests regular consumption of these chemicals may not be good for our health, particularly our gut health. So I like to just play it safe and sweeten everything with stevia and erythritol, which are natural sweeteners that actually have health benefits, not health risks. Two, all ingredients are backed by peer-reviewed scientific research that you can verify for yourself. If you go on our website and you check out any of our product pages, you're going to see that we explain why we've chosen each ingredient, and we cite all supporting evidence in the footnotes so you can go look at the research for yourself and verify that we're doing the right thing. Three, all ingredients are also included at clinically effective dosages, which are the exact dosages used in those studies that prove their effectiveness. This is very important because while a molecule might be proven to, let's say, improve your workout performance, not all dosages are going to improve your workout performance. If you take too little, you're not going to see any effects. You have to take the right amounts. And the right amounts are the amounts proven to be effective in scientific research. And four, there are no proprietary blends, which means you know exactly what you're buying when you buy our supplements. All of our formulations are 100% transparent in terms of ingredients and dosages. So if that sounds interesting to you and you want to check it out, then go to www.legionathletics.com. That's L-E-G-I-O-N athletics.com. And if you like what you see and you want to buy something, use the coupon code podcast, P-O-D-C-A-S-T, and you will save 10% on your order. Also, if you like what I have to say in my podcast, then I guarantee you'll like my books. I make my living primarily as a writer, so as long as I can keep selling books, then I can keep writing articles over at Muscle for Life and Legion and recording podcasts and videos like this and all that fun stuff. Now, I have several books, but the place to start is Bigger, Leaner, Stronger if you're a guy and Thinner, Leaner, Stronger if you're a girl. Now, these books, they're basically going to teach you everything you need to know about dieting, training, and supplementation to build muscle, lose fat, and look and feel great without having to give up all the foods you love or live in the gym grinding away at workouts you hate. And you can find my books everywhere you can buy books online, like Amazon, Audible, iBooks, Google Play, Barnes & Noble, Kobo, and so forth. And if you're into audiobooks like me, you can actually get one of my audiobooks for free with a 30-day free trial of Audible. To do that, go to muscleforlife.com/audiobooks. That's muscleforlife.com/audiobooks, and you'll see how to do this. So thanks again for taking the time to listen to my podcast. I hope you enjoy it, and let's get to the show. All right, so thanks for coming by. Sorry that Jeremy and I completely forgot to do this at the end of last month, so we'll just do two this month. I got to put it in the calendar or something. Let's see, Jeremy's saying, can everyone hear me? Let me know in chat if you can hear me. Okay, all right, cool. Sounds like we're good. So anyways, yeah, so let's get started. Again, you can just put your questions in chat. Jeremy's going to go through them, and he's just going to be, you know, Skyping them over to me, and I'll just take whatever gets thrown my way. How about a training video with you and Brittany Pirelli? I don't know what my wife would think about that. No, I would do it for fun. I invited Brittany to come on the podcast just to talk about training and stuff, and she didn't want to. So I was like, oh, okay. No, I mean she didn't really like doing interviews and stuff. So I was like, oh, that's cool. It's just an idea. All right, so get to the next question here. So how to get back into lifting after a few weeks of a break? A few weeks, like, it depends. If you take 1 week off, you can just come back, as you know, and nothing changes. 2 weeks off, you'll come back. Maybe you'll lose a rep or two. You're not going to come back. You're not going to lose muscle. Like, if you were to do nothing in terms of weightlifting or resistance training or whatever and eat, like, you know, not enough protein, it would still take a few weeks before you actually start losing muscle. Like, you're going to come back weaker, but that doesn't mean that you've lost muscle. In, let's say you take 2 weeks off, but you just kind of keep your diet right. And you eat around your TDE and you eat enough protein, you're going to come back where you left off, basically. If it's 3 weeks plus, you know, if it's at a point where you've lost several reps, then who cares? You just drop the weight. And work in your rep range. If it's been, like, you know, in the past, my wife's from Germany, so I used to go there when we were just dating. She lived there for a couple years and we were kind of doing the long distance thing. And so I'd go, whatever, pretty frequently. And sometimes I'd be there for 4 or 5 weeks. And there was only in the, like, little place where she lived, there was one little shitty gym, and it was kind of, you know, I didn't have a car, obviously my own car. It was just kind of a pain in the ass. So sometimes I'd only get one or two workouts in a week, sometimes none, because then we'd be out traveling, like, you know, around Europe and stuff, and I'm not going to worry about it. So I would come back sometimes, you know, after I'd only had done, like, some body weight stuff in the hotel rooms as we were traveling around after 3 or 4 weeks of that. And it's just hard. I mean, you know, I just would, like, go lower weight, higher rep, just kind of get back into the groove. I'd usually end up nauseous from my workouts. It just was what it was. But within a few weeks or so, I found, like, I could be off for 4 weeks, or mainly off for 4 weeks, and then come back, and within a few weeks just be back to where I was when I left off. And also, it's just worth saying that, like, if you could just get in one or two workouts a week of heavy lifting, like, do, and that's what I would do now. Like, I'll be over in Europe at the end of the year, and I'm just going to shoot for, I mean, we'll see where we end up going, what we're doing. But if it's possible, I'm going to shoot for, you know, I don't know, 2 or 3 workouts a week. And I'll probably just do, like, an upper lower or maybe a push pull legs just to maintain. And that's totally fine. That's good enough to maintain. And I think that's it on that. So next question, what's your research process when considering a new product for Legion? I guess there's a variety of things or factors. One is looking at what is actually selling, because on Muscle for Life, when I link to different supplements and stuff, different things that I recommend, things that I take and use, I can track those sales because I participate in Amazon's affiliate program. And that pays they pay a small percentage, anywhere from, like, depending on how much stuff you sell every month, it ranges from, like, 4 to 8.5%, I think, on product category and stuff. But so first, like, when Jeremy and I were first looking at putting the Legion together, that's how we decided on our initial products. What are people actually buying through my recommendations? Because then that's a safe place to start. I knew that if I could make those products, if people were buying a lot of pre-workouts through my links and I make my own pre-workout, then, you know, I shouldn't have a problem selling it. And so there's that. And then there's, of course, just looking at the category in general. Is it a popular category? Is there a lot of competition? That's good. If there's not a lot of competition, that's not good, because that means that it's just probably not a viable type of product. And then it's looking from there at the science side of things. Can I make a good product, right? So when we start looking in the molecules and formulations, and we've had to scrap several products that, yeah, it would make a lot of money, but the products wouldn't be good. Like, I want to be able to make products that I don't have to pitch. It doesn't take, like, an exaggerated kind of over-the-top Billy Mays type of sales pitch to sell. I like products that I can lay out all the facts. It can be an educational process and say, like, for instance, we have a sleep product that's going to be coming out called Lunar, and it's going to be out in a couple months or so, give or take, probably 6 to 8 weeks. And so in that, with that product, it's the educational process is, okay, so why is sleep hygiene important? What are the negative effects of poor sleep hygiene? What are the positive benefits of good sleep hygiene? How do we improve our sleep hygiene? First, through lifestyle, like diet, exercise, some things you can do before you go to bed, and blah blah blah. When you have all that in, what can we do on top of that to, you know, sleep even better? And that's where supplementation comes in. So I like it when the sales it flows naturally and it's educational and it's kind of just logical to buy the product if you know, you're running into an issue and if you have the money for it, then, you know, it only makes sense to do these things and then add this on as well. And so like we've had to ditch, for instance, any sort of testosterone type of product or even a hormone just optimizer. Like I would really like to make a male health product, but I just, there's, you know, take Triumph, our multivitamin, which to be fair, you can't take it right now because it's been out of stock forever, which is ridiculous. And I mean, it was just, it was a learning experience for us on what happened when we ran out, of inventory, because what happened is our manufacturer that I'm not using them anymore. Basically they kept on telling us like, oh yeah, we have everything, all the ingredients, but one ingredient. Oh, and then it'd be a new problem the next week, a new problem the next week, something else the next week. But we kept on getting told like, oh, don't worry, it's going to run on this date. Don't worry. That date would come and go, come and go, come and go. And basically in the end, what it boiled down to is they, I had 10,000 bottles on order with them of Triumph, and they wouldn't run it because they just didn't care, basically, because they have Herbalife and they have all these other big companies, massive, massive companies, and they had exploded themselves in this merger and they were behind. And so basically they said, fuck everyone but our biggest accounts, but they wouldn't tell everyone else that. Instead, they just would string us on basically and tell us they're going to run it and then not tell us not, tell us not. In the end, we found out like they just don't care. They're not going to run it because they don't care and they're not going to sort out the ingredients problems and blah, blah, blah. So I had to actually just cancel that order, find a new manufacturer. And then they rushed production, 6 week production time, which is really fast in this industry. 8 to 10 week is normal. And now finally all those bottles are wrapping up. And so it's going to be back in stock. Anyways, back to the point is take Triumph. If you know that there's your hormone optimization, you know, zinc, magnesium, vitamin D, vitamin C, there's just not much you can do. Like all the random little herbs and fancy things that you see in test boosters are shit. They don't work. They don't do anything. And it doesn't really make sense to make a separate product that has more or less the same ingredients that Triumph has. And you know, for what? So, you know, if you want to be healthy as a guy or as a girl, take Triumph. So there's an example of a product that we've had ditch where there's a huge demand for it. Yeah, sure. It could be easy money. I could, if I didn't care, I would just make it and I would just sell it like bullshit. It wouldn't be hard to do that, but that's not in keeping with what we're about. No, that would just not be kind of a, that would just be me throwing away my integrity for what? To just add, you know, a product to make some more money. I can add a different product like Lunar, the sleep product, and make money from that. And it's a good product. And I can, it's in keep, it is in line with kind of like what Legion is all about, and in Muscle for Life and what our whole thing is all about. So that's, I guess that's kind of the process. And yeah, so then, you know, there's a lot of research that goes into it. And we, you know, we have someone that helps a lot with that. And that's like his whole world. And so he's very good. And so, yeah, I think I'll just move on to the next one now. Oh, also, by the way, we do have greens coming too. I know you're saying that, but we're going back and forth on the flavor, actually. We could have already had it done and out probably like a month and a half ago, but we want to get the flavoring better. Like I bought a bunch of the greens products that are bestsellers on Amazon and they're fucking terrible. They taste so bad, except for one. There was one that was like minty that tasted all right. But most of these green supplements are awful tasting. Like I can't believe that these guys are selling tens of thousands of bottles a month between Amazon and all their other accounts because they taste so bad. Like who would actually want to drink that shit? I guess people are putting it into smoothies with fruit and stuff from juice or something because with water, it was disgusting. Like I ordered 6 or 7 and they were gross, all of them but one. So we want ours to actually taste good with water. Like maybe, you know, it's still going to taste like a green spot. There's a lot of stuff in there that doesn't necessarily taste great, but we want it to taste good where you'd be happy to drink this with water and you don't have to mix it with a bunch of calories. Cause me personally, I don't want to do that. I want to just drink it with water. I don't want to have to mix it with juice and waste calories on juice just because my greens product tastes terrible. So that also, you know, that's why that one's not out yet, but where I think the next sample run that we get from them is going to be good. Like this last one that we got today was pretty good. We just wanted a little bit more improved. So, that's almost there. All right, so the next question here. I love the mixability of Legion's Whey, but find it has a slightly bitter aftertaste. It isn't so bad when mixed with fruit, but on its own, a bit more noticeable. Is that because of the stevia? To the point I was just talking about, it's a good question. That's the leucine. It's not the stevia. Some people actually are sensitive to stevia, but we're not using – there are two different types of molecules that are extracted from the stevia leaf that are generally used for sweetening. We're using one that's less bitter. But still, some people are sensitive. Like my wife does not like stevia. It tastes bad to her. Jeremy actually doesn't really like stevia all that much. It doesn't taste good to him. He has that bitterness. It's a little bit of a bitter aftertaste from stevia. Me, I guess I can kind of taste it, but it doesn't bother me. But what you're probably tasting is leucine. And because we add leucine, there's an additional 4 grams of leucine added to every scoop, which, by the way, we're not counting that as protein on the label, which would be amino spiking. That's actually there because of there's a few studies that show that, particularly in a post-workout meal, that the more leucine, the higher the leucine content of that meal, the higher the protein synthesis rates. So it's one of those things that's not a huge, oh my God, this is changing the game, and that's not how we sell it, of course. But with each of our products, we're always looking for how can we make this a little bit better. We could just sell a whey protein isolate, but we wanted to look at it like, okay, whey protein isolate, naturally sweetened, naturally flavored. That's a good place to start. But how do we make it a little bit more? And that's what we came up with was, there's this research here. It's valid. It makes sense. Let's do it. Let's add some extra leucine. The problem though is that, and we've learned this now, leucine, it tastes like shit. If you buy it just by itself, like in bulk, it's terrible. It's really awful tasting. And therefore, it's very hard to mask, especially when you're using natural sweeteners, natural flavoring. And we don't want to just have to have 5 grams of malto per serving. There's like less than 1 gram of malto per serving because maltodextrin is great for cutting bitterness. So we're using a little bit of malto because for that reason. We don't want to just have to put a bunch of malto. So basically, what we've decided after getting a lot of feedback selling thousands and thousands of bottles is that we're just going to remove the leucine and we're switching over to an even better tasting, higher quality protein. I guess it's hard to say higher quality. Like we're using the highest quality whey protein isolate you can find right now in the United States. But we're switching to an isolate from Ireland that we all just think it tastes better. And that's not really surprising. If you've ever been to Europe and you just taste anything over there, I know Ireland's not Europe, it's UK, but you get what I'm saying. But if you've been over the pond, everything tastes better, especially the dairy, just European dairy. They're much stricter on their, in terms of what you can and can't do with the livestock. And it's been like that for generations and generations. And also with the land itself. And so the net effect is every single food thing, except for steak. I would say American steaks are better for some reason, but everything else in Europe tastes better. Everything. Eggs, dairy, grains, fruit, vegetables, everything. Like you're surprised at how good an apple can taste when you go to Europe and eat, an apple that you just buy from the grocery store. Like this is the best apple I've ever fucking had. What is going on? So that's what we're doing. We have to get rid of the leucine because of this reason. It doesn't taste good. And some people are very sensitive to it, meaning some people, they find it, they just think it's gross. I think it's like, I can see that. Again, I think I just have a Rottweiler's palate or something because I just use Forge, but before I train fasted, I would have leucine. I just mix it with water and be like, yeah, whatever. But some people like gag when they try to do that. So we're getting rid of the leucine, but we're switching to a protein that tastes even better. And we've done more work on the flavor system as well. And so I'm excited for that protein because it's really good. Like it's really, really good. I think we've done a good job and we've worked a lot on our current protein to make it as unbitter as possible. And I think that our next stuff is at least 25% better tasting without the bitterness. So that's kind of the story of the whey. Next question. On chest and ab day, how long does your ab circuit typically take? The dips, crunches, and air cycles, I feel like it takes me forever, so I wonder how long yours take or lasts. It's a couple minutes. I mean, you do your cable crunches. I'm always in like the 10 to 15 rep range on the cable crunches, and then you go do the leg raises, and I'm usually doing like maybe 30 to 50 of those, and then doing 30 to 50 air bicycles. And so it's a few minutes. But again, remember, you don't have to do a ton of these. Like if you just did 3 of those, 3 times a week, that's plenty. Some of the people that I speak with that really like want to go after their abs a lot or just can. And again, it's not super necessary. I mean, again, I think if you did 9 total ab circuits a week, just split them up 3 days, that's plenty. It really is. Some people, they try to, they really just want to do more. So they do six in each workout for like a total of 18. And I guess there's, you don't, that's not like bad, but it's just overkill. So you shouldn't have to spend more than 10 or 15 minutes on your abs, basically, is what it boils down to. Quick question here on when is Stacked coming, an update, beta release, so forth. So basically we're at a, I'd say we're like 70% there in terms of getting to beta. They're working on just a lot of like all the basic functionality is there and it's working. There's just a lot of bugs right now and just working through some different functionality stuff. I'm actually going to be sending out an update soon though. It's just being coded. So, you know, the page is being put together. So you can see how it's going to work and you can see the design and, I'm excited for it. The whole thing has dragged out and taken a lot longer than it should have. Again, mainly because the designer is just a lazy asshole and took forever. And it was really my fault for choosing him, though. I should have known, just given my previous history with him, that why would I go with him again? Even though he swore he would get this done. And on the flip side, he's done a good job. Like, his design is very nice, and I think you're going to appreciate the aesthetic of what he's done. But the design was supposed to be done in the end of January. So what has happened is the coders have had to kind of work piecemeal on it. So whatever, learned a lesson there. But in the end, it's not going to matter because the design is basically done. I'm chasing up on him to the designer to get the last couple things done, but it's, you know, basically done. I'm excited because it's just so much better than anything else is out there. I know I always say that, and you'll see when you get to use it, and you'll see in this update, at least you'll see some of the functionality and how it looks. But there's just a lot of, it's a clean, intuitive app built by someone that actually lifts weights and knows the most important, like what needs to be really good about these apps to make them more useful than just a Google spreadsheet. Because even some of the better apps out there that people use, I think, well, I won't call any out in particular, but, I'd say the best that I've used are like not bad. There's nothing in it that where I go, I like that. There's a reason why I should use this over a Google spreadsheet. Really. I mean, cause you can just lay out in a Google spreadsheet everything and then just roll through it. And, you know, if all you're doing is just recording your numbers, which is generally all you're looking to do, you don't even need an app to do that. And also, you know, with like 82 in-store purchases and stuff, just annoying. So, I'm going to say, what do we have? September like 9th or something. I'm going to say that if by the end of this month, if the coders, the dev team, if they have all these bugs that they're working on right now wrapped, where basically it's good to go, all the core functionality that you're going to want to use, there'll be some peripheral stuff that we're saving for last, but like really the core of the app done by end of the month, that would be that. I think that's a realistic target. And then everything else, like through beta testing, like start selling it, I'm thinking December, January. Just because I want to give enough time to really get good feedback and make sure I don't want to release something. Of course, it's not going to be 100% perfect. There will be bugs that we don't find, and that's just an ongoing thing. But I don't want to like rush something out that's kind of like half broken because I don't – why? Like I might as well take the time and spend the money just to get it more or less right the first time. Yeah. What do you think of intermittent fasting on the weekends while eating at a moderate surplus the rest of the week to keep fat gain to a minimum and be able to eat out once or twice a day with family, girlfriend, and eat almost anything as long as there's a good amount of protein? That's a lot to that question. All right. So intermittent fasting on the weekends while eating at a moderate surplus the rest of the week. Yes, calorie cycling is good. I'll say this. Like, if you're at a moderate surplus, let's say you train 5 days a week and then, you know, you take the weekends off. So if you're in a moderate surplus on those training days, mild to moderate, let's say 5 to 10%, of course that's good. You know that that's going to help you with building muscle. You're going to be strong in the gym. You're going to be eating a lot of carbs. It's good. And then you can negate that surplus, with a larger, more aggressive deficit, somewhere around 25%, maybe even as high as 30%, depending on how big your surplus is during the week. On like Saturday, Sunday, when you're not training, you don't need as much calories and so forth. And, you probably go, you just eat less carbs essentially is what you do. Nothing else really change. But What you should know about that, though, is that's still not as good as just being in a moderate surplus or a mild to moderate. I'd say a mild surplus, really what it is. 5 times, that's a mild surplus, 7 days a week. Like if you, for muscle building purposes, because of course your body's still recovering Saturday, Sunday. It's not that, you know, oh, you finished training on Friday, so now all recovery is wrapped up by Friday night, so you can go in a deficit for 2 days. Your body is still recovering for several days, especially after, you know, heavy, intense workouts. So if you're in my position, where I'm at with my body is that I've achieved the majority of my muscle growth potential. I've achieved. Maybe if I wanted to go really ham and I could gain another 10 pounds or so of muscle over the course of the next few years, but I'm not really looking to do that. I kind of have the look that I want right now. So calorie cycling for someone like me would make sense. Although really for me, I'm just looking to eat around TDE, but let's say I was like, you know, 5 pounds lighter and I wanted to gain those 5 pounds then, and I still wanted to stay lean because I like staying lean. And it's also kind of like relevant for my work just because most guys want to look lean. I mean, that's one of the big things. They want to have some muscle and be lean. So I need to represent, you know, what most guys want to look like, just for the purpose of my work. And, you know, so people can go, oh, he walks the walk. But if that were the case, then calorie cycling would make sense, where I would gain that weight slowly, but I would gain little to no body fat along the way. So if that's you, then yes, that could work for you. If you're like, let's say you still need to gain another 20 pounds of size just to even be happy with where you're at, then I wouldn't recommend that. I'd just recommend a good quote unquote lean bulk, where you're in a mild surplus 7 days a week. And save the calorie cycling for in the future when you're more in my position, where you're going, okay, I just kind of want to maintain my physique. I want to get stronger in the gym. I want to slowly gain some muscle over the next year or two, and without really having to bulk up from, let's say, you know, 8% body fat to 15, I would more like to stretch out maybe from 8, maybe and get up to 10-ish. And because, you know, it's unlikely you're going to get your calories exactly spot on. And if you're going to calorie cycle, you're better off being a little bit on the high end. You're better off erring on a little bit of the high end than the low end if you're trying to, you know, progress in the gym. So that's that part of the question. And then in terms of like IF, sure, if you like it, do it. Like I actually do it myself. Just usually because I skip breakfast on the weekends, because I like eating fewer, larger meals on the weekends because my calories are lower because I'm not lifting. So I do eat a bit less on the weekends. You know, not every weekend. Sometimes I'll eat breakfast. It just depends if I feel like eating breakfast. Most of the time I don't. And I just start eating around 12 or 1. And generally I like to eat more of my calories later in the day just because I enjoy it more. I don't have any other reason other than that, really. I just like having more food at night. And I'm not a super big breakfast person unless it's like pancakes or waffles or something that I'm not – I mean, not that pancakes or waffles are bad, but I was doing the pancake and waffle thing like for months and months and months, and I just beat it to death and then lost interest in pancakes and waffles and then had nothing really worthy of replacing them. So I just started saving my calories for later in the day when I can make food that – you know, dinner type of food that I want to eat, or – as you were talking about going out to restaurants. Now, eating out once or twice a day and eating anything you want, that's not going to happen, just to let you know. Unless, like, if you want to stay lean, if you want to stay at 10% body fat, this is for a guy, obviously, or under, and as a girl, 20% or under, you're not going to be going out once or twice a day on the weekends and eating whatever you want. No way. Because unless whatever you want is like low calorie foods, but that's not why you're going out. You have to realize restaurant food is, it can be delicious, but it's a nightmare for just dietary reasons, because you make food but taste good, pretty much any food, by adding fat, by adding cream, by adding oil, by adding butter. And, you know, that's just what you do. So you don't know, you have no idea how many calories you're eating, and you'd be surprised. You go to a restaurant, and if you're going to go hard and you're going to be like, ooh, I want 2 appetizers and I want an entree and I want a dessert, depending on what kind of cuisine that is, I mean, that could be thousands and thousands of calories. That could be 3,000 calories. That could be 5,000 calories. Depends on what you order. So you can imagine like eating 1,000 to 1,500 calories at a restaurant is like being very conservative with your intake. That means that like you intentionally chose lower calorie options, basically. So just know that. And it's, you know, you can do it eating out twice a day, but you need to know foods, you need to know macros, or you will end up overeating. I guarantee it. So what will happen is you'll be in a surplus through the week, and then you'll go out on the weekends, and you might think that you're not that high calorie, but you're eating 1,000 calories more per day than you think you are, and so forth. So, all right, next question here. Can I train fasted on a bulk diet? Is it a problem for muscle growth? I actually like training fasted, so I understand. I just like the feeling of having an empty stomach. But I will say, if you have some protein, or really actually, if you have some carbs before you train, like 30 minutes before you train, if you have, let's say, 50 to 80 grams of carbs, 50 to 60 is probably enough, really, you're going to be stronger. You're going to notice, and not just stronger, but like for me personally, that's a difference of like 20 pounds on my squat. It's not a small amount. It's kind of counterproductive. When you're bulking, you want to be pushing as much weight as you can, and you want to be pushing everything as hard as you can. So fasted training, it's very likely that you're going to be stronger by having food before you train. Also, it's very likely that you're going to be stronger training later in the day. I wrote an article about this a while ago that, you know, for whatever reason, I think it was guys in particular, tend to be stronger later in the day. And from what I had read back then when I wrote the article, it wasn't exactly clear why. The most likely reason was hormone fluctuations in hormones throughout the day, where anabolic hormones are a little bit higher later in the day, which doesn't mean anything for muscle growth per se. It gets a little bit of a boost for strength. So if you're bulking, like ideally you would be training probably around 4 or 5 p.m. where you've already eaten, you know, food throughout the day, and then you're having carbs before you train, protein as well, because you might as well. And then, of course, afterwards, you're eating protein, carbs as well. So, but if you want to train fasted on a bulk, sure, you can do it. It's not going to get in the way of muscle growth at all. I would recommend that you have something like leucine or HMB or BCAAs before you train fasted, just to counteract some of the muscle degradation that occurs, or some of the accelerated muscle degradation that occurs. All right, next question. Would you rather be shredded but 5 feet tall, or skinny fat and 6'5"? That's fucking great choice. Oh shit. I don't know, dude. 6'5"? That's so absurdly tall. That's uncomfortably tall. That's like you don't even fit in cars. I guess I'd just be a shredded midget, dude. At least I could still do what I do. I could be like, yeah, whatever. I was fucking, well, I'm 5 feet tall, but look at me, dude. Here, check out how I do it. Like a shredded Danny DeVito. Oh, that's great. That's great. Okay, next one. Is reverse dieting completely necessary? I know a lot of McDonald's simply suggests eating at maintenance for 2 weeks and then bumping up for a surplus. What do you think? It's a good question. You know, I think the biggest benefit of reverse dieting is preventing you from just going ham on food after you've been in a deficit for a while. There's no question that after you've been in a calorie deficit for 8, 10, 12 weeks, whatever, that your body is primed to store fat at a rapid pace. So the last thing you want to do is finish your diet and then just start slamming down food, especially high fatty foods, because you are going to gain fat back very quickly. So I think that's the in terms of like TDE, the reduction in calories burned. It's not so much a reduction in your BMR. Like if you look at the Minnesota starvation experiment, which I've talked about in different articles and podcasts and so forth, these were guys that, it was during World War II, and it was like simulated starvation, like as if they were prisoners of war. So this was like 6 months of, was it 6 months or no, I think it might've been a year. I don't remember now. It's been a little bit since I've looked at it, and they were eating about 1500 calories a day and burning over 3000 calories a day, because they were doing physical labor and stuff as if they were a prisoner of war. And after many, many months of this, the in terms of, I think the biggest reduction in basal metabolic rate was about 14-15%. That's true starvation. If you're eating half the energy that you're burning, you are starving your body. I mean, a lot of these guys, they looked like, prisoners of war afterwards. So it's more a reduction in your total energy expenditure, which is expressed in different things like you're going to burn a little bit less energy when you are exercising. You're naturally going to move less. It's called non-exercise activity thermogenesis, NEAT, N-E-A-T, where some people are very high NEAT types where they fidget around, they move around a lot, and it actually can add up to be quite a lot of calories in terms of energy burned. And you have low NEAT types that are naturally just like slothful and just sit there and don't move. So when you're in a calorie deficit over time, your body, it adapts in different ways to reduce its energy expenditure, and you don't even necessarily realize what's happening. So the big benefit of reverse dieting is slowly introducing more food back in to prevent like just binging or just way overeating. And then there is that where you're slowly working your body's energy expenditure back up. So, you know, I would say try it. I would say that, I mean, that's one of those things that I don't disagree with what Lyle's saying. The safe play is to reverse diet, which is, that's why what I recommend, especially for people that are new to dieting. So they've just dieted down for the first time. You know, obviously I'm a big proponent of flexible dieting, so they haven't had to completely restrict all the foods that they like, but you know, you don't get to eat as much as you want to eat when you're in a calorie deficit. It's just the way it is. So, you know, when people are new to dieting, I don't want them to go from that and be like, finally. And then even if they don't like go binge, what I'll see sometimes people do, it's like a calorie creep. They just slowly, they add a bit more like every day, you know, like they're a bit more bite to this, a bit more bite to that. Cause they're out of the diet mentality now. Like they're done cutting. Now they can be a little bit more relaxed with their intake, but then that can get out of control. And within a week, they're eating way more than they really should be. So, I would say give it a try. I would say, you know, cut, and then you can try what Lyle's talking about. Just go right back to TDE in terms of your intake, and see how you feel, see how you look. And then next time you cut, try reverse dieting, see how you feel, see how you look, and you know, see which one you like more. Next question: as an entrepreneur, how did you develop so much self-discipline and efficiency? I guess I've kind of written about these things, and I mean, it's hard to kind of summarize that because it's. I don't know. It's just kind of like the way I am, I guess. But you know, there are, I can say that, if you're struggling with that, like for instance, maybe incorporating habits that you've wanted to incorporate, you know, there's that kind of reality that the things that you need to do, that there's a difference between things you want to do and things that you know that you should do, that you know you should do. And things that you know you should do are almost always take effort in the beginning. It's never necessarily just easy to start doing whatever it is that you need to do every day to get to where you want to be, especially in today's culture. It's much easier to just be like, yeah, fuck it, I'll do it tomorrow and just like turn on Netflix or something. So, you know, a lot of it is you have to know really, you know, why are you trying to do this? Why is it important? Why does it matter? What are you trying to achieve? Start with the end in mind. Where are you trying to go? And, you know, I'm just a big believer in habits and routine, basically, like where I have a very set routine in my life, and I've had it now set for a long time, and I refuse to change it for anything but like emergency pressing reasons, basically. And, when I have that certainty with myself, like these are appointments I'm going to keep, like tonight, I'm going to be here at 6:55, and we're going to start this. There was no question in my mind. Maybe I'm going to come. Maybe I'm not going to come. I don't know. Let me see what's on Netflix. Oh, fuck it. I'm not doing it tonight. You know what I mean? I guess there are people out there that operate like that. That's just not how I am. So I kind of treat my most important things, and that doesn't necessarily just mean work also. I mean, there are things in my personal life, maybe with my family, even my stupid shit. I play golf once a week where I'm going to be golfing every Sunday from 1 o'clock until 5 o'clock or maybe 6 o'clock every week, period, unless I have a really, really good reason not to. And then there's a reason for that. It's, I like being outside. I like using my body. I like doing something other than just weightlifting. I grew up playing sports. I kind of miss it a little bit. And so it's a valuable activity to me. So, you know, I'm kind of just rambling, but, I think a good way for me to help in with these kinds of questions is we're going to send out the first one this week. I'm going to be doing kind of a books of the month type of deal. Cause I read a few books a month, maybe 3 to 5, depending on how long they are. And some I like and some I don't like, but I'm going to start building up my book recommendations on Muscle for Life for all different types of things. So then I could say, I get emailed with these types of questions too, where I can just be like, hey, you need to go check out these books. Like for instance, I just read, I may have read this in the past. I don't remember, but anyways, it may have been a reread. The 7 Habits of Highly Effective People. Like for this kind of question, I'd recommend that book. It's very long and the dude's very verbose. He belabors every point to the point to where you're like, oh my God, I understand. Can you please move on? But there are some great insights in there, and I really recommend it. Same thing, Flow, although Flow is not as verbose and it's better written and more enjoyable to read, but it's more academic and dry. But I would highly recommend that you read the book Flow as well. Another book recently that I read that we also do at the office here, a monthly book club where we all read one book and then we all discuss it together. There's a book called The One Thing, which I recommend, that I think is very good for when we're talking about efficiency, because efficiency is good. Like being able to get a lot done in a short period of time is good, but you need to also be able to prioritize and know what are the most important things that need to be done. Cause you know, when we die, our inboxes are going to be full. Our to-do lists are going to be still too long. We're never going to get all the things done that we can think of done. So we have to decide what's going to get done and what's not going to get done. And so I think even more important than efficiency is that prioritization, because you can take someone that's really good at prioritizing, but they're inefficient. And in the long run, they're going to way outperform the person who's very efficient, but can't prioritize for shit and just does whatever it is that comes to mind or whatever it is that gets, you know, thrown his way or her way. So anyways, I think that this little book thing that I want to do, I'll be curious to see people's feedback if they like it, but I'm going to be sharing like some of the key takeaways, some of the things I really liked from the books, and it might help you where if you like any of the things that I liked about it, you know, it might help you go, oh, I should read that book. Next question. Is it possible? Oh, yes. Okay. So, would you substitute cardio with yoga once a week? Yeah, sure. You have to look at the calorie burn of it. It depends on the yoga, obviously. Like if it's just stretching yoga, you're probably not going to burn much in the way of calories. But if it's more power yoga type stuff, then I'm sure that you can burn a fair amount of energy, especially if you're doing a little bit of like, if it's a, I don't know, 45 minute class or something like that. But yeah, I think yoga is great. I actually used to do it myself once or twice a week. And I felt, I liked the stretching and I also just felt good after. I don't know. I felt it's a different feeling than working out. So I think yoga is great. All right. So any advice on rehabilitation? I haven't done upper body workouts in 2 months now due to forearm tendon pain. Any ideas? Tried to test that a few times and mess it up even more. Rehab is really not my specialty, and I don't have much insight. Like I know things that I've read and I know from working with some people, but I myself have not really worked through, like, you know, I strained my back deadlifting this week, which is the first thing that I've had really happen in a long time, that beyond just like showing up, working out and leaving and rinse and repeating over and over and over. And which was random. It wasn't even that heavy. It was like 415 and it felt totally fine. And I was, you know, at the top of a rep, and it just felt like my back was like a muscle spasm. Like it came almost like a little bit, like I just lost tension in my lower back, and now it's sore. And, you know, I don't know. I might have to wait a couple weeks before I deadlift again. So I know that like if you're having tendon issues, you have to rest it. That's super important. You have to stop doing whatever it is that's pissing it off. Very, very important. And, you know, that's the guy that I work out with was having some, it was somewhere in his elbow. It was like golfer's elbow type thing, because he's actually started golfing again. And also working out with me. And basically for about 4 or 5 weeks, he had to, and he didn't push to the point where it was a problem. It was just starting to bother him. And he had to for 4 or 5 weeks, he couldn't do, I think it was side raises actually is what he couldn't do. So no side raises whatsoever, not lighter weight, not, oh, I'm going to try it. Not, I'm only going to do one set, nothing. He didn't do anything that put any stress on the tendon. 4 or 5, maybe 6 weeks go by and then it's fine again. No problem. He also is getting massage. Massage, depending on the problem, massage can help. I get massage once a week for just that reason. You know, if you work out, intense type of workouts, they put a lot of stress on the body and they're going to cause muscles to, you know, remain tight, that they can't relax. And the next time you work out, it's there's a better chance that you can hurt it, which may be what happened with my lower back. I don't know. It's kind of random. Again, it could have been even like at the top, I didn't fire my glutes properly. That was my guess when I was looking at it. Because, just a little tip, when you're coming up on the deadlift, once the bar kind of gets to your knees as you're coming up, the motion, it's a lot of glute flexion. That's kind of what finishes. Like, the whole movement isn't so much picking the weight up. It's actually more moving your hips forward. So when you're down, your hips are back, you're down, your bar's on the ground. It's not just like squatting the weight up. It's more a movement of thinking of like putting your crotch forward and standing up as you do that. And at the top, your glutes are, you're firing them as hard as you can. So I think I just didn't do that. And then by not doing that, it puts more stress in the lower back. And, I guess I'm lucky it wasn't any sort of injury. Is just kind of a strained muscle that, whatever. I've had things happen like this before. So again, I don't have great, I know there are some supplements that can help with inflammation, like curcumin could help you, spirulina could help you, fish oil can help you. And those are good just to take, period. I take them all every day because there's a lot of health benefits. But if you're running into, any sort of tendonitis, anything anti-inflammatory is going to help. I personally know people will just pop like ibuprofens, every day. I don't like to do that. I would rather, take natural things and then wait it out a little bit. Of course, icing, if you're having inflammation issues, icing helps. But this is an area that I actually am going to be diving into more. I don't think I'll be able to get to it for another month or two because I'm going through all my books right now and updating them to, second editions. So Cardio Sucks is about 2.0 is about to come out, and it's greatly improved over what I had before, which is one of the earlier books that I wrote. And I didn't really, it was a short, simple book. I didn't really know if anyone was going to care kind of thing. Like, I tried to make a good book, but I'm just better writer now and I know more and blah, blah, blah. Also I'm working on the second edition of The Shredded Chef, which is going to be, I'm really excited for, because, expanding the content. And, I had done a survey with everyone that bought the first edition, or at least all the people that came and joined my list, and, got a lot of feedback on the recipes, which recipes they really liked, which recipes they didn't so much like, how things could be improved. So, when that's done, I'm going to be rolling through Muscle Myths, possibly Green Get Lean. And then I'm going to be starting on a new book project, which is going to be all about mobility and rehabilitation. And, I guess it's going to be more about mobility, but there's some overlap there that, depending on what you're running into, that there are probably some different mobility type of things that you could be doing in terms of whether it's foam rolling or mashing, the soft tissues, or stretching the soft tissues, or different types of exercises and things that would help. I'm sorry I can't be more helpful on that, but it's just an area that I'm not familiar with enough yet to like have any advice that you couldn't just get Googling, basically. Runner's knee, trying to figure out how to help it heal. Same. Sorry on the knee issue. Although you can check out, if you go on Muscle for Life, I posted an article just last week on joint pain. For the knee, I talk about, cause I've had some patellar tendonitis, very mild, but what I found was, I had a lot of tightness in my right quad. Like, my right quad was a lot less flexible and just tighter than my left. And by working on that, it helped a lot with, the patellar issues that I was having squatting. Check out the article. Next question. I train for 5K races and run 5 to 6 miles a day. Should I increase protein intake to preserve muscle, or carb intake to spare protein being used for fuel? Currently 1 gram per pound for protein. Yeah. I would say, before you go running, I would have some protein, and before and after, I'd have some protein. 1 gram per pound is going to be fine. No reason to be eating more than that. And you can have some carbs before. I mean, it's going to help your performance. And in general, a higher carb diet is going to be better for preserving muscle, just because when your carb intake is higher, your insulin levels are just going to be higher in general. And insulin isn't anabolic, but it's anti-catabolic. So that's one of the reasons why a high carb diet is just better for building muscle, because, you have protein synthesis and protein breakdown, and the balance between those determines, whether you gain muscle or whether you lose muscle. If your synthesis is higher than breakdown, you've gained, vice versa, you've lost. So you can affect that by affecting either side of that scale. You can increase protein synthesis or you can decrease protein degradation. Insulin decreases protein degradation, protein breakdown. So that's one of the reasons why I recommend a high carb diet for when you're dieting, because it helps you preserve muscle, and it also helps you preserve strength in the gym, which helps you preserve muscle. If you're running a lot, I also just recommend that you unless you're cutting, and if you're cutting, that's fine. I mean, that's a lot of cardio to be doing when you're cutting. I would probably recommend a more mild deficit if that were the case, maybe a 10% deficit. And you're going to have to work in your weightlifting. That really depends on your body. You might only be able to lift 2 or 3 times a week, just because if you lift more, there's a point where your body just starts to feel shitty. But if you're not looking to lose fat, then, make sure that you're eating essentially as much as you can, without gaining fat. So really, you know, eat at your TDE and try to increase above your TDE, try to reverse diet up and see how high you can bring your food intake without, you know, gaining fat, if you care, basically. All right. Next question. How long can it be in a calorie deficit? Is 3 to 6 months too long trying to get to sub 10% body fat? Not necessarily too long. No, it depends where you're starting. And, you know, it's more, what determines when you should come out of a deficit is more how much you're eating, relative to your BMR, your basal metabolic rate, and how you feel. So if you're at a point where you've cut your calories down, you've reduced them down to your BMR, maybe even a little bit below BMR, you're not feeling very good. You know, you have low energy, you have low libido, you're not sleeping good. You just kind of feel run down. It's time to come out of a deficit. And that goes back to what we were talking about earlier. You could reverse diet out of that, which is what I would recommend, or you can jump up to TDE and see how your body responds. Again, in working with a lot of people, I can tell you for a fact that reverse dieting is reliable in that you're not going to put on fat and you are going to feel better. And it's really only adding 4 weeks or so to get to TDE. It's not like it's a 3-month thing to reverse diet. So if you're kind of new to dieting, then I recommend that. If you're not and you already know that you can just jump to TDE, fine, then do it. But there is no set, don't cut for longer than blah. It's really like, Once your intake is down around BMR, you don't want to go way below that. So like my BMR is about 2200 calories. I end my cuts. I have never gone lower than 2000 calories a day. And just because I know that the lower you go under BMR, the worse you're going to feel. There is a point where your body goes, all right, settle down. This is too much. So I play it by that. If you're starting, you're wanting to get below, getting below 10%, I can tell you that if you're starting around, let's say 13, 14%, you want to get down to, let's say 8% or 7%, you're looking at probably 3 months. If you're starting above like 15% or above, I wouldn't even try to go straight to sub 10. I would get to 10 first and then reverse diet. Just take a break. Even it just gives you a psychological break from being in a deficit for that long, that it's going to take to get there. Make sure that you're eating, you're back up to TDE, your weight stable, and then go for the 10% to 7%, which again, I mean, that could be, 8 to 10 weeks for sure. Just because fat loss is slower. As you get leaner, it gets slower because you're dealing with stubborn fat. You're dealing with fat that's just resistant to being mobilized, and you can supplement to help. That's where supplements can help, particularly in fasted training. You know, you have like caffeine, you have green tea extract, you have yohimbine. Basically, the stuff that you're going to find in like, if you're going to have a Legion fat loss stack, which we're going to be releasing soon with our new website, by the way, is you have Pulse for the caffeine and also just for the other stuff. But in terms of fat loss, we have caffeine, and that works synergistically with several of the ingredients that are in Phoenix and as well as yohimbine, which is in Forge. So that's kind of the fat loss stack. And you take those together. And you can do that at any point in your cut, but, I would say it is very noticeable once you get down to that. If you're a guy down to around 10% body fat, 11% body fat, if you're a girl, 20, 21%, and you want to start going lower, I can tell you for sure that it is noticeably faster when you are supplementing with those supplements and training fasted. And, again, it's not even really like a supplement pitch of my stuff, whatever brand you want, but I can tell you that caffeine, green tea extracts, synephrine, the stuff that you're going to find in Phoenix, plus yohimbine, that works really well for accelerating fat loss and especially accelerating stubborn fat loss. and It's also nice. I've noticed that once you get down to, let's say, anywhere from 6 to 7, 8%, and you stay there for a little bit, if you come back up, it for whatever reason is easier to come back down. Just like how once you've built muscle once, it's if you can you cannot train for years and go back and gain back quickly. There seems to be a similar effect with body fat, where once you've gotten to be pretty lean and you stay there for a while, you can, one, your body becomes resistant to getting fatter. I talk about this in an article on Muscle for Life. On if you search Muscle for Life, you search set point, S-E-T, new word point, you'll see an article I wrote on this, where one, your body becomes more resistant to just being fatter. It kind of, its new default becomes this leaner state. If you do get fatter, which of course you can, you eat enough food, you'll get there. It's for whatever reason faster to get back to, you know, that leaner kind of set point. So, there's a benefit there. All right. Next question. Everyone knows the maximum necessary protein is 0.82 grams per pound of body weight. And if we allocate more than that, people say it's too much protein. What does this mean? What if I like eating protein? What if I weigh 170 pounds but enjoy eating 350 grams? Damn, you like eating that much protein? That's crazy. If I'm eating my minimum fat intake, 0.4 grams per pound, and carb intake fueling workouts. All right, so I'll summarize that question because I was kind of rambly. So basically you have this in terms of protein needs, you'll hear like the standard gram per pound is, you'll hear that a lot. And then you'll have some people say you do not need more than 0.8 grams per pound. And, you know, I think that there's, when you look at, there's quite a few studies out there on protein needs, especially protein needs of athletes. And here's the thing. As you get leaner and as you have more muscle, you need more protein, especially if you're in a calorie deficit. I would say 0.8 grams per pound is not enough. If you are in my position, like if I wanted to cut right now and get really lean, that would not be enough. I'd be better off eating more. Also, even for the satiety effects of protein, I would be upwards of 1.2 grams per pound. But if you're not in a calorie deficit, you know, is there really a difference, practically speaking, between 0.8 grams per pound and 1 gram? Probably not. You know, it's not like you're going to gain so much more muscle because you're eating, you know, a little bit more protein. But again, I mean, some people, they freak out about this. You know what I mean? Like, what are you talking about? You only need 0.8 grams per pound. No, you don't need 1 gram per pound. Like, dude, I wrote an article on the Legion blog actually about protein needs and summarize quite a few studies are in there that I reference. And, you know, with certain things, I like to be kind of on the safe side, where if you want to be on the safe side, especially if you're a lean person with a relative amount, you know, if you have a decent amount of muscle and you train regularly, eat a gram of protein per pound and you're going to be fine. If you, for whatever reason, need to squeeze in that extra 3 bites of Pop-Tart or something, then okay, fine. Drop it to 0.8 grams per pound and eat a little bit more carb if you really want to. But, you know, it's kind of just splitting hairs. It's a pointless argument. You know, the argument would at least be worthwhile if we were talking about, you know, 0.3 grams of protein per pound versus a gram, because then that would free up quite a bit of calories for other things. But we're not talking about something so minor. And, so no, a gram per pound is not too much. Now, if you want to eat 350 grams of protein per day, sure, you can. You know, I'm trying to remember I was just looking at a review recently on protein intake, and upwards of 400 grams a day. And if I remember correctly, in people with healthy kidneys, it was fine. But you realize that you are sacrificing your carbs if you do that. And that's not ideal. Unless you can, I mean, 175 pounds, unless you have a crazy ass metabolism or you're on a crazy amount of drugs, you're not going to be able to eat a ton of calories. And if you're eating 350 grams, I mean, you could be eating, let's say, 170 grams of protein per day. And that's an additional 170 grams of carbs that you could be eating. And that's going to make a huge difference in your training. That amount of carbs on top of whatever you're eating now is going to be like big, big difference. You're going to notice it every workout. You're going to be stronger. You're going to have more energy. you're going to have that more high insulin anabolic environment, which I was talking about earlier. You know, and so you are actually sacrificing something. Because let's say you did 350 grams of protein per day and like 200 carb and some fat. That is, for muscle building and strength building purposes, is quite a bit worse than 170 grams of protein and let's say like 400 grams of carb and some fat. I mean, that's a huge difference in terms of training and you know, what kind of results you're going to see in, from your workouts. And in terms of 0.4 grams per pound of fat, that you do not need that much fat. That's a lot. Like for health purposes, 0.3 grams per pound of fat-free mass, not body weight, but fat-free mass is adequate for health reasons. If you want to go a little bit higher than that, okay, fine. That's why when cutting, I recommend 0.2 grams per pound, just because that works out to be about 0.3 grams per pound of fat-free mass. And it's easier for people. So you're getting enough protein, you're getting enough fat for your health, but you know, you're not waste, quote unquote, wasting or spending a bunch of calories on fat that could be carbs, which are going to make a much bigger difference in your cut. And so even if you're not cutting though, like if you're bulking, you know, I guess if you want to eat that much fat, you can. But it's a bit more than you need. What do you think of mini cuts? If you think they're okay, how many times throughout a bulk should they be done? I'm not really a fan of mini cutting. If you're bulking, I recommend that you just don't blow up your diet so you can stay in a, Jeremy says impossible. So you can stay in a mild surplus, you know, and really drag it out. So like, let's say you're a guy, you're starting at 10% body fat, give or take, or you're a girl starting at 20% body fat. You know, if you're going to bulk, I would like to see 4 to 6 months, before you're up into that, before you've gained the 6 or 7% body fat that necessitates cutting. And that means sticking to your diet. I mean, that means like, you know, you have to, instead of just going out and having cheat meals or cheat days, it's much smarter to save your calories on those days. So like if you're going to go out to a restaurant at night and eat a bunch of food, just eat protein throughout the day. So come into that meal at night with basically all your carbs and fat, that you can then, you know, go ham. I mean, you can eat so much food before you just are disgusted with yourself. So if you can minimize that damage, you know, then you can do that by what I just said. And I'm not a fan of mini cuts because I feel like in my experience, when you're bulking, you get into this, when you're doing it well, you're doing it right, you get into a rhythm and there's like a momentum that gets built where every week, you know, like you're sleeping good, you have high energy, you have high glycogen in your body, your workouts are good, you're making gains every week on reps, on your big lifts, and that gains on reps turns into gains in weight. And I feel that in my experience with my body and just working with people, that throwing in mini cuts can screw up that momentum for some reason. So I'm not a fan of it. I think it's totally fine if you're maintaining. If you're in a position where you're just happy with your body and you just kind of want to keep it the way it is and you eat too much, like let's say you go, you know, somewhere for the weekend and you're like, I don't give a shit. I don't get to eat food like this. I'm going to just eat everything. And you gain a pound of fat over the weekend and then you go into a deficit for a week to get rid of it. Who cares? Why not? You're just trying to maintain anyway. But that's a luxury. I mean, you have to earn that basically. And you get to where you want to maintain and then you can have more flexibility. But if you're not there yet, I recommend just a more traditional mild surplus, long periods of time, push heavy weight, progress in your lifts, and you know, save the mini cuts and the calorie cycling and all that stuff for when you're more just in a maintenance mode. All right, next question. Any tips for finding someone to train with? All my friends are too lazy and flaky, as I've discovered the hard way. Got any tips? No. I've gone through the same thing. I mean, I've always like had someone to train with, but it's changed over the years for the same reason. I mean, some people, they just quit, they get sick and never come back. They this, they that, or they change their training times. You know, I go early in the morning, which I understand is not for everybody. I've gone for long periods of time working out by myself, 6 months, you know, and I don't even mind it because I get through my workouts a little bit faster. And I don't have any problem asking people for spots if I need it. And I really only want a spot on heavy bench pressing. Not that it's totally necessary. I can go in the power rack, obviously, and set it up properly. I don't even need a spotter. So remember, you can do that. But if I don't want to do that, I can just grab someone for a spot. And if I'm military pressing, sometimes I like have a spotter as well. I don't know. And come, just learn to enjoy isolation. That's my life lesson. Any tips for finding? Okay. So Hey, Mike, understand, in order to make gains, one must be in a calorie surplus. Can the calorie surplus be calculated on a weekly basis? For example, if my TDE is 2,000, and in order to make gains, I have to bump it to 2,200, instead of eating 2,200 every day, can I eat 1,800 on 4 days and eat 2,700 on the remaining 3 days, even though I'm in a calorie deficit on my training days? Thank you. No, I wouldn't recommend this, because when you're in a calorie deficit, what's happening is your body's ability to synthesize proteins, it's impaired. And that's why... That's the long story short. There are also some hormonal things that change as well. That is why it's very hard to build muscle when you're in a calorie deficit. If you're not brand new to weightlifting, so when you are trying to maximize muscle growth and you're trying to maximize strength progression, you want to basically have no days in a deficit, basically. Now, of course, if you're like in a surplus 6 days or something like that, and then you're in a deficit 1 day for whatever reason, it's not like you've screwed everything up. But the more days in the week that you're in that you have that surplus, the better it is for your training. That's just what it is. So I kind of covered this just a few minutes ago, so I won't go all back through it. It kind of goes back to that mini cut point. As I know that's enjoyable, I understand, because then you get to, for whatever reason, if you're thinking like Friday, Saturday, Sunday, you're going to eat more. Friday night, you're going to go out. Saturday, you're going to go out. Saturday, Sunday, you're going to, go to the family dinner. Yes, that's enjoyable, but it's really not optimal for if you're really trying to get the most out of your training. So I would recommend not doing that. I'd recommend saving that for when you're in a maintain mode, basically. Do you run into people that tell you how lifting is not healthy and that counting calories doesn't work? If yes, how do you deal with it? Yeah, I know. It doesn't remind me of today. Someone came on Muscle for Life today, and they had like 9 different discuss accounts for the comments, and started a conversation with themselves. I know it's them because I can look at the IP address of the people that are posting. It's an idiot. So he's actually having a conversation with himself, like, calorie counting doesn't work. I ate, McDonald's for 15 days and gained 32 pounds. And then he would respond to his own thing with a different discuss account, pretending to be somebody else, like, yeah, this guy's an idiot. Calorie counting doesn't work. And then, so I just banned them and deleted it all, which I rarely do, but if I only ban people that are straight trolls, basically. Like, I'm totally fine for people to disagree with me and have like an actual discussion, but if they're just trying to troll me, I just ban them. I don't have time for that. Who cares? So lifting is not healthy. That's the dumbest shit I've ever heard. No, I've never, that one I've actually, I don't know if I've ever heard before. I've had people say that cardio is more healthy than weightlifting, which is not true either. But I've never had anyone say that. There's research. If you search for like Google, like study lean mass mortality or something like that, you'll find that basically the amount of muscle that you have on your body is directly related to just all cause mortality. Meaning the less muscle you have, the more likely you are to just die one day of disease, of dysfunction, fall down, break your hip, and you're fucked. Also the muscle, your muscle lean mass you could think of it as like it's a resource pool for your immune system. So if you were to like have a severe trauma, like a severe burn type of thing or a muscle wasting disease, and you're in the hospital for a long period of time, the more muscle you have, the more likely you are to survive that, basically. So like one of the most healthy things you can do is to have a larger amount of lean mass than what is normal, because normal lean mass levels are low and they get lower as you get older. If you can have the opposite, if you can have higher than normal lean mass and maintain that as you age, basically you are ahead of the curve in so many ways. The quality of your life is just going to be better, because you can do things that people as you get older that people of that age can't do, whether it be water skiing with your kids or whether it be dirt biking or playing sports or whatever. You're less likely to get hurt, like I said, fall down, break your hip, stuff like that. You're less likely to get sick. You're just better in every way, essentially. Your insulin sensitivity is going to be better, so you're not going to deal with all the health problems that come with obesity. I guess you could if you really ate an absurd amount of food, but if you at least understand how dieting works, then you'll be fine.
you don't have to be like shredded to be healthy at all. You know, a guy with a good amount of muscle at 15% body fat is perfectly healthy. So that's the lifting. I would just be like, what are you even talking about? Like, how could you say a weightlifting is unhealthy? This makes no sense. It's not, it's also, maybe they would say it's bad for your joints. No, it's not. Again, if you just read the article, go search Muscle Life for joint and you'll see the article I just posted on it. It's not true. That weightlifting is bad for your joints. It can be bad for your joints depending on what you're doing and how you're doing it. But if you do it right, it's not bad for your joints at all. And then calorie counting doesn't work. I mean, that's just the dumbest shit ever, dude. Like, I feel like the calorie counters are, or the calorie deniers, sorry, are, they're like the truthers of the fitness world. And, you know, I say that actually kind of tongue in cheek because I don't trust our government for shit. Who knows what they're up to, but you know what I'm saying? There are people that deny, you know, just the basic laws of energy balance. Okay, let's say this. They're the flat earthers. That's a better one. Calorie deniers, people that say that calorie counting doesn't work, are the flat earthers of the health and fitness space. They're actually a fucking joke and they should just be shunned and ignored. I mean, there's a reason why the last century of metabolic research has shown that, and this is unequivocally, there's no arguing this, that for meaningful weight loss to occur, energy intake must be less than energy expenditure, period. End of story. That's why if you Google Mark Haub, I don't know if I pronounce it, H-A-U-B, weight loss, you'll see there's a professor, I refer to this a lot, not because it's like some great scientific experiment, but just because it stifus people that come at me with this stupid shit of like, oh, so you're saying that I could just eat Doritos every day and lose weight? Yeah, that's actually what I'm saying. Go look at this. That's what this guy did. He's a scientist, and he just to prove this point, he had like a protein shake and like Twinkies and Oreos and Hostess snacks and shit. He just, in a calorie deficit, he lost like 30 pounds over the course of a few months, and basically every major health biomarker had improved. That was the thing that surprised him. Like, he was that, it just shows how unhealthy being overweight is and how healthy being in a normal weight range is, where he's eating straight trash, convenience store diet, and everything is better within a few months, every single major, you know, health biomarker. So, you know, every once in a while, I get someone on the blog that says that, and I'm normally like patient with if someone is seriously like, you know, hey, I thought calorie counting doesn't work. I thought blah. But if they're just kind of like, oh, you don't know what you're talking about, I'll post 50 studies right now that show that calorie counting doesn't work. Like, oh, okay, please do. because, you know, you have the law of the energy balance is based on the first law of thermodynamics, right? So energy can't be created, can't be destroyed. You can't gain fat from nothing. Fat is an energy store. So you can only gain it if you have a surplus of energy coming in, and you can only lose it if you have a restriction of energy. So anyways, you know, again, people don't really say that stuff to me in person, but I do get it every once in a while. But I just link them to a couple articles. And, you know, some people are very stubborn and stuck in their ways. And, you know, this guy that was posting, like having a conversation with himself, he had one of his things was like, oh, just go paleo and you'll be okay. Like, yeah, that makes sense. That's something he would say. That's something, you know, someone like brainwashed into paleo would say. Not that paleo is a bad way of eating. It's fine. It's a healthy way to eat. But it's unnecessarily restrictive. So, you know, if you like eating that way, sure, but there's nothing wrong with eating grains. There's nothing wrong with eating some of the foods that paleo says you can't eat. Okay. So what do you think, Jeremy? One more? A couple more? Okay, cool. Okay. All right. Well, we'll do a couple quick ones before we wrap up here. I'd like to keep on going, but I still have to finish tomorrow's article. All right. So the next one here is, what's your opinion on continuing taking Forge Phoenix even while bulking? I know it sounds counterintuitive at first, but wouldn't the improved insulin sensitivity and such help with improving the ratio of muscle to fat gain during bulk? My standard recommendation is save your money, actually. Don't. I would just save the cutting supplements for when you're cutting. And I mean, I get where you're coming from. The only thing you have to keep in mind is that, like, synephrine, for instance, you're going to build a tolerance to synephrine over time, just like you build a tolerance to caffeine over time. And I would say this, it's not going to be bad for you to do that, but I don't, practically speaking, think it's going to make that much of a difference. Because kind of the point of bulking is that you maintain that calorie surplus. So if you're like, let's say you keep on doing, you know, caffeine, and Phoenix and Forge. So you're burning an extra, let's say between the caffeine and Phoenix, well, and Forge too, you have the Yohimbine. Let's say between all that, you burn an extra 200 calories a day. You have to account for that in your intake. So that means you're just gonna have to eat 200 calories more than usual. And obviously over time that, you know, spike in your basal metabolic rate is going to decline over time because your body builds tolerances to stimulants. So, you know, if after several months it's now 150 calories and it's just, you're gonna have to eat it anyway. So yes, maintaining, of course, you know, good insulin sensitivity is a big part of minimizing fat gain when you bulk, but there's not much you're going to do in terms of supplementation. I would say maybe berberine, and, you know, outside of the standard stuff that I recommend, like fish oil can help with that. Making sure you're getting enough omega-3s is good for that. There's some stuff in Triumph that can help with that. But the main thing with that is just being lean and being physically active and training your muscles is the most, those are the most powerful things you can do to help maintain an insulin sensitivity. Supplementation can help, but, you're going to get the most bang for your buck from your diet, really, and making sure that you are in a slight surplus and you're not just piling on body fat. So, you know, I would say now just save Phoenix and Forge for when you're cutting and when you're bulking, just make sure your diet is right. You know, if you take Triumph, then that will help a little bit in that regard and among the many other things it can do, but it's not so much of a supplementation thing. And, you know, we've actually funny that you asked that, probably why Jeremy chose it is because that's one of the products going back to even what I was talking about in the beginning that we looked at making. We wanted to, is there something we could make that even you could have like before a cheat meal, let's say, before you're going to eat a bunch of food, is there something you could take that would prime your body, basically like increase insulin sensitivity enough to where you're even less likely to store fat from that meal. And there just was nothing that was compelling enough to make us want to make a product and, you know, again, feel good about selling it. And basically, because anything we sell, we want it to not just like, oh, kind of work. Like we want it to be like, this works. Like we want you to be able to take it and be like, wow, that this is worth my money. Like I actually feel a difference. Like Triumph. So many people love Triumph because they actually feel a difference. They have more energy when they take it. They have more focus. And, you know, I've had quite a few people that are also like, I mean, a lot of our following are the very educated people. And so they know that like, are they just kind of tricking themselves? And so they'll stop taking it for a little bit and start taking it again where they're just like, no, I mean, I just feel better when I'm taking Triumph or, you know, Forge, you know, that works. Like, you know, that Yohimbine's in there when you take it because you feel it, you sweat more, your heart rate is higher. It works. There's no question. So, you know, in terms of like, a insulin kind of optimization thing, there was just nothing natural that really, you know, did it for us. The one thing that we do really like is berberine. We've tried to work it into products, but it tastes so bad that we haven't been able to use it. We may just sell it as a standalone product, as like an add-on, which is an optional. We'll explain why we would add it to this stack, you know, but we'll see on that. Haven't quite decided yet. All right, next question. Today, I ate a protein bar that was horrible. Not many are great, as we know. Will Legion be making anything like that? I would love to make protein bars. It's something that next year we'll be looking at. We want to do an energy drink as well. Because like you, you probably do the same thing. I'll have Pulse randomly throughout the day because I just, one, I think it tastes good. But two, I just like the effects. I like the beta-alanine tingles. And I really like is the caffeine-theanine combination is really nice for working, for just, it boosts mood, it boosts my focus. And, you know, the vast majority of my work is writing and thinking, and I just really like it. But for that reason, obviously stuff like betaine, beta-alanine, ornithine, there's no reason for just the, if I wanted just something to like for the pure mental and mood effects, there are other things that I would swap for those ingredients. So that's the energy drink that we want to make, which the formulation is actually done. We just haven't pulled the trigger yet on starting development because we're just, you know, have a lot of money tied up in just getting everything back in stock that we have and getting ready for the holidays. So next year we're going to start reaching out to, you know, manufacturers of drinks and stuff. And that's also when we're going to start looking at protein bars. Cause yeah, I think there's some cool things that could be done with protein bars. You know, you have right now, obviously, Quest bars are probably just still dominating the world. And, you know, they're just shady with their net carbs. It's bullshit. It's, you know, you think that it only has 2 grams of carbs, but it doesn't. It could have 15 grams, 20 grams of carbs. I wrote an article about that on MFL. If you want to search for it, search for net carb and you'll see why that's bullshit. So, I think there is an opportunity to do something special there, but haven't looked into it yet. Another product that just kind of makes me whatever, just reminds me is that we want to look at doing, I think we can do a good job on, is a weight gainer. I don't like that phrase, weight gainer. Just like I don't like fat burner, even though we use fat burner, cause that's just now it's become synonymous. Like Phoenix, what else do I call it? I guess I call it a fat burner. But you know, it's, I think of it more as like a fat loss accelerator, but that sounds stupid. So anyways, on a weight gainer, a meal replacement shake for people that have to eat a lot of calories and just hate stuffing down all that food. Or, for people that just want the convenience of it, you want to finish your workout, drink a shake, go to work and be done with it. You don't want to have to eat breakfast. And that'd be me for sure. 100%. So with, some interesting type of carbs in there and, some interesting healthy fats and good protein. And, so anyways, that's another product that we're going to be looking at, next year. It'll be one of our next products. Actually, we have the greens product coming out, then the sleep product. Then we're going to be doing some more flavors of protein. We're going to be doing some big protein jugs, some new flavors of Pulse, I believe. I mean, we have watermelon coming out. I don't remember. Then we're going to do fish oil. That's going to be a new product. And then we're going to be looking at like some of these other things like the energy drink and, protein bars. Weight gainer will probably be one of the first things just because I know that those products are popular. And I personally don't like them and I don't recommend them because a lot of them are just full of shit calories. They're just full of like simple sugars and just crap. I'd rather people eat food and get some nutrients for that 1,000 calories. So that would be my idea for a weight gainer, be more like a nutrient dense, an actual, you could say healthy, but a nutritious meal replacement, that, you know, meets all your macro and calorie needs. Next question. If you eat too much sodium, how long does it take to get rid of? That's a good question. You know, I think it depends on body to body. Like, Jeremy, he just holds more water naturally and sodium will rock him and he'll hold water for several days. From like him and I, if we went to eat the same foods, in terms of sodium content and everything, like, yes, I will hold water, but he's going to hold more than me and he's going to hold it for longer. It's just the way his body is. So me personally, I notice it like if I go to a restaurant over the weekend and eat a lot of food, which also restaurant food, keep in mind, like a general rule of cooking is salt the shit out of it if you want it to taste good, basically. And a teaspoon of salt, a teaspoon has about 2.3 grams of sodium. So you can imagine, you know, if you're eating like, you know, say, again, if I go to a restaurant and I have like two appetizers and I have an entree, I have someone else's entree. Sometimes if I'm going to go ham, I just eat everything. I can eat so much food in one sitting. It actually kind of blows my mind sometimes. But you can easily eat, what would you say, Jeremy, like 10 grams of sodium? In one go, if not more, depending on what foods you're eating. So if I do that, I notice that I'm holding water for about 2 to 3 days, maybe 2-ish days, until it finally normalizes. And depending on how much I actually ate, of course, there could be some fat in there as well. So it kind of depends. But, I would say that, you know, if you eat a lot of food and after 3 or 4 days, you're still looking what you think is bloated, it's probably fat. And if you've brought everything back to where it needs to be and your sodium intake is back down to normal, your potassium intake is normal, because it's just the fluctuation that causes the fluctuation. So as it comes back to, as it normalizes, you should see that the water retention normalize. Last question. All right. So last question. And then I got to call it a night and finish writing. So at what point does it make sense to start adding in HIIT? I'm at 13% now and I'm trying to keep my deficit moderate. That's a good question. I would say if you're at 13%, like what I've done, see, I've done it different ways. I've done no cardio just to see how lean I could get doing no cardio. And I found that I could get to about 10%, give or take. And I just couldn't get lower because I would have to have reduced my calorie intake too much, or tried to weight lift even more and it would become a problem. And so I found that I had to add cardio at that point just to keep the body fat coming off. And so I would say, you know, let's see. I mean, I've known guys and girls as well that don't have to do any cardio period just through weightlifting and diet. You know, they just have fast, resilient metabolisms. their energy expenditure just stays high and they don't have to do any cardio and they can get pretty lean. Now, of course, girls that are getting super lean are doing cardio, period. But, you know, I've known guys that can get down to the 8% range and girls that can get down to the 17, 18% range without any cardio. So it kind of depends on your body. You don't have to do any. If you're happy with your progress, and you have a moderate deficit, then don't do any. But if you find that you get stuck, then that's when you know, and you're tracking your intake and you make sure that you're doing everything the way it needs to be done, then you know that you have to burn more energy and it makes more sense to add some cardio if you're doing as much weightlifting as you can. If you're doing like your 4 to 6 hours of weightlifting a week, I wouldn't recommend trying to bump that up to 8 hours of weightlifting a week, for instance. I would say add some cardio. So yeah, I think that's a simple answer there. And gonna have to call it a night, but I hope you enjoyed it. And we'll be doing another one this month just to make up for missing last month. So that'll be at the end of this month. We'll send out another email. We'll just do it the same way that we did this one. And so if I didn't get to your question tonight, we get a lot, as you can see, and Jeremy does his best. He does a good job sorting, getting through them and trying not to repeat questions that we've already addressed. So, if we didn't get to your question, then just come next week it's going to be in 2 weeks, 2 or 3 weeks. Just ask it again and then hopefully if it's something we haven't already covered or if something that, Jeremy tries to pick things that would be broadly applicable, then, there's a good chance that it'll get in the mix. So, I hope you like this and have a good night. And, article coming tomorrow on Legion. It's going to be on intermittent fasting and I'm happy with it. It's coming together nicely. I think you're going to like it. So that's it for now. Have a good night. And thanks for spending the time with me.